Siren Radio.
Okay, plastic crocodiles, I don't know. Over the last few weeks, it's fair to say that our critique of the Welsh landscapes and valleys, etc., has been concerned about yourself, William. He's been concerned about the challenges you've been faced with, from obviously being the house elf in Croatia right the way through to the stresses and strains of clearly unisex loos that we were talking about last week. This week, it seems you've almost gone one better, according to your Facebook routine. You had to do it, didn't you? You had to actually go to the cricket, and actually you had to actually start shouting and hurling abuse at an Australian cricketer. Or was it you after all?
Or was it me after all? Yes, well, I'm afraid to say it was not me. It was just too good to resist. It is the curse of our age, Alex, this yearning, this hunger for notoriety. So I claim to be the MCC member who'd been thrown out of the pavilion for abusing this Aussie batsman, Steve Smith, and calling him a cheat and a disgrace, which he certainly is. But I'm afraid it was not me. Though the Daily Mail and the Express have been on the phone saying, will you write about it? So,
once you've had the impact in the world of journalism that you have, William, it's not surprising that when you put out a story like that, which technically you could argue was almost fake news. No, it was actually fake identity news, perhaps.
The reason why you're booing, is it because Mr. Smith was previously involved in some sandpaper-based shenanigans?
Sandpaper-based shenanigans.
In regards to a cricket ball.
Yeah. I think that sums it up, really. Very politely put, Fergus. Sandpaper-based. I can't even say the word. You're so shocked.
I think the words just came out of my mouth. I realised I was saying them.
Sandpaper-based shenanigans, William. Is that the key thing?
Yeah, well, it was. But it was cheating of the, And even worse than being caught out cheating, he then blubs like a 5-year-old in the press conference. And 1 year on, we're all supposed to just get it. And, oh, right, mate, yeah, you've paid your penalty. Get back and start thrashing England at the cricket again.
I sense you're not hugely sympathetic to our Australian folk who are clearly actually looking to take back the Ashes, and I must admit that at least they won't give us a 5-0 whitewash, but it's looking a bit worrying, despite the fact that, you know, I'm very impressed by the level of bowling that the former Tory candidate and indeed former occupant of a jail not too far away from the studios in Lincoln, actually, Jofra Archer, has been doing. I just thought he was first among equals, or is it a different Jofra? Sorry, I couldn't resist it. Never mind.
No, we love Jofra. He's going to win the Ashes for us.
Do you think so?
He's knocked out Steve Smith for the next test, and he's the best batsman in the world.
I don't think in the original rules of cricket, though, that actually bowling to the extent of knocking your opponent unconscious is necessarily in the spirit of the game. It's almost body line, isn't it, really? But there we are.
That's impressive.
It is body line.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, impressive. The first words on the return to the midweek drive of Rory McGowan. Yay, Rory!
Hello there, Alex.
So you've made the journey all the way up from Bedfordshire.
Good old Bedfordshire.
To return to Lincoln, England.
Yes.
Before you head off to Los Angeles, California.
Yes, indeed.
And the West Coast.
Yeah, all adventures for me in the next 3 weeks.
The sort of things that these journalism and creative writing undergraduate students will get up to, William. Honestly, it's like a whole new world there. But who would you like to speak to, William? Rory or indeed Fergus?
I think there's only one person
like
to speak
to. Rory.
There's only one Rory McGowan, not to be confused, of course, with other McGowans who are available, but not quite well-formed in all sorts of ways. Over to you, William.
Thank you so much. Hello, Rory. How are we doing?
I'm doing quite all right. It's been a busy day, William, but no, not too bad at all.
So what's happening in LA when you get out there?
So I'm going with my family over to LA. In fact, as soon as I entered the studio and told Alex that I'd be going to LA, he's like, we're going to set you up with Phil Lynas.
Well, not in a kind of romantic sense, obviously.
Not in a romantic
Phil's got
sense,
married this year and so on. So
you and Phil Lynas are going to meet, and we're going to do all the Siren Radio bits and pieces.
You never know, Alex, those Hollywood types.
Anyway, but no, we're going to, hopefully we're going to go to Disneyland. We're also going to San Francisco to hopefully go and see Alcatraz. That should be fun. I've never been to the West Coast, so it's all sunshine, hopefully, and adventures for me.
Well, I know my dad, who completed a kind of motorcycle trip down to the West Coast in May, he says, better to go to San Francisco than LA, but there's nothing in LA. There's much more life to San Francisco.
There are an awful lot of derelict individuals who tried to actually make it in the show business world in Los Angeles, so I gather lots of graffiti. Obviously, you've got the San Andreas Fault, which actually goes up the entire West Coast. So
I've been told by my dad that you need to go there, like you need to stick to a place and go there, whether it's Disneyland or I think that's in Anaheim. Or you go on a studio tour, or you go for the Walk of Fame. I think he just said he went on a bus tour, and it was like, oh, here's where someone got their hair cut one time.
It's like, it's like once upon a time in Hollywood,
yes.
Isn't it, really? Yeah, quite literally.
Yeah, very much
you
so.
Know, you can actually take the whole thing through, and then as if by magic, you can actually press the button and find...
The Vagabond, attention now, the Vagabond class of 1958 of University High... We'll hold a reunion June 22nd. Oh, but you'll get to look at everybody's hair thinning and see if Jane really was a victim of baby fat. We'll find out for sure now. For information and reservations, you phone 478-2370.
Obviously don't, because that was from a movie. But there we are, you know, just a slice of Vagabond High material there. William, you must have done the West Coast shtick. What advice would you actually give Rory, you know, assuming that our West Coast correspondents effectively say, no, we've got other things to do in August than to actually sort of look after some folk who've come over from Britain to try and recolonise us?
I would go off to the best cinema in Hollywood, which is Man's Chinese, and I would go and see the best film of the year, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Really?
The best film of the year?
Whoa.
That's high praises.
I mean, I know, and sneak ahead here to tomorrow's Richard Fitzwilliams review. He's actually seen the movie twice.
Oh, gosh.
I don't know. I don't know.
It is the big release, and, you know, I'm normally split with Tarantino, but I think, for me, this might be my favourite Tarantino
really?
Film. Yeah.
Your favourite? So all of that negging women, you know, 2 hours worth of scenarios where you just think, oh, it's got really good actors, it's got really good shots, it's got really good images, but it's a lousy movie. You don't agree?
No, I think it's a great film. Yeah. I was wondering for a moment, like the two main plots, not to spoil anything, how are these going to come together? Mm. And in the climax,
well, obviously, if you've got a serial killer, if the serial killer had actually gone up against, might of two famous Hollywood actors, one of whom might be related to a kind of Robert Wagner routine, clearly they wouldn't stood a chance. I don't know. We'll find out. I think it's got thumbs up from Robin Pierce as well. So I don't know.
Thumbs up from me.
Thumbs up from you as well.
I'll have to go see it then. You can't escape it from all the advertising and
Well, I mean, actually, speaking of advertising and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I only want you to listen to this commercial if you're under 25. It's about new Tanya Tanning Butter, the suntan product with no sunscreen added. And you know what that means. It means the only ingredients between you and the sun are natural coconut oil and cocoa butter, Hawaii's favorites. That and a little lava smoke thrown in there for Tanya Tanning Butter's guaranteed to give you really deep Hawaiian tan faster than you ever thought possible. It's so fast, in fact, that you might even burn a little bit, but we've all done that. Not enough to hurt, though. If you want the deepest, fastest Hawaiian tan on the beach, you better pick up on some Tanya Tanning Butter. Prices start at a low 85 cents. That's a small price to pay.
A deeper, faster Hawaiian tan. That's what you get when you use Tanya. Yeah, Tanya. From Malibu to Miami, you'll tan like you in Waikiki. Get Tanya. Get Tanya.
Robert W. Morgan. 93 KHJ.
You see, it's words like the Tanya Tanning Butter Cream that really proves that Darwin might have been wrong, actually, in terms of evolution. It's just a thought there. That, have you ever been tempted to actually use Tanya Tanning at all in terms of your experience, William? When you were over in Croatia, for instance, you think, Lord, if this was only 50 years ago, apart from that it would be Yugoslavia and not Croatia at all, I would have loved some Tanya Tanning Butter on me.
No, I don't want to tan at all. I put on, smug myself with a factor 50. No, gives you wrinkles, you know, Alex.
Exactly. Pale but interesting. It's the way to go, way forward. News from Anna Lewis. She's been wading through files at the London Metropolitan Archives and had phone on silent. It's okay. It's all right. Don't worry. You understand that. You don't want to be in a library and suddenly you get a call. I'm on the radio. Never mind. So, any questions for William that you'd like to... posit his way up in Edinburgh now? It's the first time he's been back in Edinburgh for quite some time, actually, Rory.
Oh, really? Then in that case...
festivals, perhaps. The reason he couldn't do a bonus phone link on Saturday was because he was taking his mother to Festival Delights and so on. A poor excuse, I thought, actually, William, but, you know, at the end of the day, we ran with it.
Have you been able to check out any of the Edinburgh Festival this year?
Yeah. I was at Ostentatious today, which is an improv thing about Jane Austen. You give these guys the title, and today's title was Empires, and they work out a Jane Austen plot, and this one included Darth Vader, Lord of Vader, and Spider-Man.
God, sounds
sadly
great.
Spider-Man no longer part of the Marvel studio.
It's
gone. Sony saying, we want our toys back. You're not going to have it. It's intellectual property.
Sony can't be trusted with that toy. Look at the last time they played.
And they brought J.K. Simmons back as well. It's kind of bridging thing.
I heard it was Marvel's fault.
Listen, it's
not to stir the pot.
If anything, it's Disney, you know. So that's Disney. The end of the day.
My apologies.
It's a whole new area on that sort of fact, and let's not get started on the absence of DC Comics at this year's San Diego Comic Con. Honestly, sometimes I feel that the world is just going to heck in a handbasket, William. If it wasn't for your good self and probably the Midweek Drive team, then where would we be?
Where would you be?
Probably in the hospital or infirmary. No, I always like Wellington and boots when appropriate. Tomorrow we might be doing a trip to Cleethorpes. I know, Cleethorpes. It's an invite we've had from Chloe Rose, so a trip to Cleethorpes is always very exciting.
I've heard it's a good place to visit.
There you go. Cleethorpes, a good place to visit, possible alternative to the west coast of America. Let's see if you can remember those last two questions. Rory, would you like to throw them in a kind of verbal sense up the coast from Lincoln to Edinburgh?
I can indeed, Alex. William, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today on the show?
I've loved it. Thank you.
And will you be joining us again soon?
I most certainly will. Thanks very much.
No doubt in my mind.
Up next, TV critic Alex Zane on the most irritating habits of people going to the movies ahead of National Lottery Free Cinema Day.
And the leaves hanging down and the grass on the ground smelling sweet. Outside of town and the sound of that good gospel beat. Sits a ragged tent where there ain't no trees, and that gospel group sweat, he walks in. Eyes black as coal, and when he lifts his face, every ear in the place is on him. Starting soft and slow, like a small earthquake. And when he lets go,
got two good hands. Hallelujah. And when your brother is troubled, you gotta reach out your one hand for him. Hallelujah. Cause that's what it's there for. Hallelujah. And when your heart is troubled, you gotta reach out your other hand. Hallelujah. Reach it out to the man up there. Cause that's what he's there for.
Take my hand in yours. Walk with me this day. In my heart I know I will never stray.
Century. 25 years since the National Lottery started off in a whole range of bits and pieces as well. 25th birthday celebrations. And indeed, what better way to actually celebrate than to go to the cinema? And with National Lottery Cinema Day actually taking place, who better can we actually bring on board the programme except presenter extraordinaire, comedian extraordinaire, film review writer? It's the one and only Alex Zane. How are you, Alex?
Hello, Alex. Thank you for that introduction. That was very nice.
Marvellous. So it sounds as though this is really great from the point of view of National Lottery Cinema Day. And yet, in the words of the late Barry Norman, sometimes people actually say, I can't stand people with their mobile phones working. I know directors in Los Angeles have said that they would rather actually have some sort of execution order put out on people who actually have screens that light up in films, etc. And that's before we even thought about the slurping of the drinks or of various other bits and pieces. We think, no!
Wow, I just flashed back to all my worst cinema experiences as you were making that noise. It's terrible. Yeah, as part of the 25th birthday celebrations, the National Lottery did a survey to find out exactly what the pet peeves were of people. And you're absolutely right. It is mobile phones. And it just drives me nuts. I came up with a plan to have a little monitor in the back of the chair in front in a cinema. And it has the seating map of the whole cinema. And if you see someone with their phone, you just hit a button. And once enough people have hit those buttons, the person is sucked below the cinema into a threshing machine and turned into the Doritos cheese whip that you put on them.
Harsh, but at the same time, how else is Tarantino going to get ideas for his later movies, basically? So it's a way forward, certainly, on that sort of basis. But and it also recycles as well. Upcycles, you could say.
That's right.
I mean, it's almost as bad. I mean, during the Marvel era, etc., people actually would leave long before the end credits actually, or their end credits actually start, and they miss the last two things, necessitating obviously the look of scorn from people who actually stay right until the very end. Maybe we should actually reintroduce the national anthem, where we actually wait until the very end and stand up on that basis.
Yeah, it's funny. I do sort of think about when the credits are rolling, and now we are inclined to wait for the post-credit sequence in a Marvel movie. The people who made the film, like The Best Boy, you'd never normally know who the best boy of a picture was, but you're sitting there waiting, reading their credits, going, oh, well done, that best boy. But yeah.
I mean, sometimes I must admit one looks back nostalgically over the day where basically most of the credits were actually in the opening title sequence, which was usually well done, and then by the time you actually reached the end, it was basically something like James Bond will return, and that's it, really.
That's right.
But still, all the end. Okay, moving on. The great thing about National Lottery Film Day, of course, is that as well as pet peeves, there are various other bits and pieces that are happening there, but there are also superb scenarios that are coming through. Really impressed recently with Blinded by the Light by Gurinder Chadha.
Fantastic.
You've got Horrible Histories, the movie, Rotten Remains, you've got Asif Kapadia's Maradona, which has been given flagged up all sorts of things, etc. Are we in a golden age, Alex, do you think, in terms of cinema? I mean, when people, the sort of middle of the 21st century, when they're all into their gaming activities and their virtual realities, etc., will they look back and say, Lord, they had some wonderful choice movies then?
Well, I do think that cinema is changing at the moment. I was just talking to someone about this morning, which is the fact that we are in an era now where the middle-of-the-road blockbuster, sort of an $80 million blockbuster, no longer exists. Mm. Now film studios want to make an event movie. They want a movie that they know is going to break the billion-dollar barrier, so they're happy to spend $250 million making an Avengers movie, a huge superhero or franchise movie.
Or an X-Men movie. Oh, dear. Oh, never mind. Ooh, harsh, yeah. I know. Wow. It was a Sophie Turner tried so hard in Dark Phoenix, though. That's the whole thing. You just think, oh dear, where's it going?
I know. I thought she was great as well. I think she's great as Dark Phoenix. Look, to put a little bit of icing on the X-Men cake, it's great that they are now back under
Kevin Feige.
Marvel banner.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, Kevin Feige's got them back. He's got Fantastic Four back. This is obviously because Disney now have taken over 20th Century Fox, who had those licenses. So I think we are going to finally get a great X-Men movie that harks back to the brilliance of maybe X2.
We talked about, obviously, the whole cinematic experience, and I must admit, I've recently taken myself off to a cinema which actually offers one of those wonderful deluxe experiences where you can press the seat back and it eases, and I just think, wow, this is really impressive. But there are still cinemas out there that actually, no names obviously, but I think they haven't really much progressed since the days of the flea pit in many ways, which can be an experience in its own way, really. But, you know, comfort in seating, I think, is pretty critical to the whole viewing experience.
Comfort in seating, and you know, and like you say, mentioning no names, but you do sometimes go into a cinema, and the worst thing about certain cinema foods, hot dogs and nachos and nacho cheese, that is a smell that doesn't want to leave the auditorium very quickly. And when you walk in, you're like, wow, how long was the last screening ago? Yesterday. Why does it still smell of nacho cheese then?
It's a bit like the days where if you wish to actually partake in tobacco, smokers had to go to the right-hand side because obviously the smoke wasn't going to move from one side to the other. You're far too young to remember that, Alex, but it used to happen. I'm unbelievable.
I've no idea what you're talking about. Smoking? What?
Exactly. Definitely a nod on. So in terms of actually the whole notion of watching films, now clearly if I was given a choice, I'd probably select a meerkat to go because I think actually, you know, what's more lovely than actually seeing a movie with a meerkat, although actually in real life it might prove difficult to control and there could be sort of pest questions as well asked if you actually walked in with a meerkat. But who would your favourite person...
If you were, I would not allow that. I'd be straight over to the usher going, I'm sorry, there's someone here with a meerkat in the cinema.
Yeah, it's true. I know it's not going to work. I mean, you know, the dream is there, the concept is there, but somehow I can see it sort of possibly not manifesting in reality. But if we're looking for people to actually watch, would you say it's best to go with somebody who's a passionate follower of cinema or just a random soul? I mean, obviously, cinema as a social experience has moved from everything from the date movies. I mean, let's face it, without the romance, where would Hammer Horror have actually been from that point of view back in the day?
Yeah, well, it's part of the research that the National Lottery did in preparation for National Lottery Cinema Day. They actually found out who the ideal partners to go to the cinema with, depending on movie. And it turns out, sorry mums, but it's dads who people think are the best companion to watch a classic UK film, which to me says everything you could possibly want about certain dads, where they go, oh, this is lovely. They don't make them like this anymore. Look at this. You can keep your Avengers Endgame, Bridge Over the River Kwai. That's what I love.
Actually, I seem to recall my father used to go to sleep in the cinema, but that's a different line from that point of view. He didn't snore, but he used to nod off, basically, and then sort of wake up and stuff. So it goes. In terms of movies this year, I mean, I think we have been spoiled in many ways. And I mean, looking ahead, obviously, next year it's Wonder Woman 1984, and
that's
The
right.
Black Widow gets made, and a whole heap of other goodies as well from that point of view. Any particular ones that have sort of, I mean, in terms of, we mentioned Avengers, I'd say if you could actually put together Infinity War and Endgame, you'd almost have the perfect movie.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I mean, no, but seriously, it's that thing. Although we are talking about going to the cinema, and I do truly believe going to the cinema is still the best way to watch a film because your attention is there. You're not sitting on the sofa looking over going, oh, the washing up needs doing. Oh, look, the dog's looking at me with the lead in its mouth. You are just totally in that moment of watching that film. I do agree. I watched the Lord of the Rings Extended Edition, all three movies back to back. And I'm going to do the same with Avengers Infinity War and Endgame. And there is something wonderful about having that 6 hours of just being invested in that world.
And size of screen, because recently Apocalypse Now has actually been released on IMAX and it's going through that basis. We had obviously Jaws and so on.
Incredible as well. The new version, the director's cut, the final cut. I forget what they're actually calling it. It's not Redux because that was the last one, but it's Francis Ford Coppola's perfect vision for what he wanted from this movie. And it is just magnificent.
and obviously upcoming, we have a little thing, I believe, that relates to the Skywalker family and that dysfunctional people who actually existed a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, around about December. I think it might make one or two sort of waves with Disney fans. You know, just a thought on that basis.
I think so too.
But in terms of, say, favourite movies this year, is that a case of don't be silly? I can't ask that question. I'll talk about National Cinema Day and Cinema Day, etc., and National Lottery, but to choose a movie this year?
That's so funny. I once asked Barry Norman, I was interviewing him on a show that I was doing, and I once said to Barry Norman, so just tell me, what is your favourite film? And he literally looked at me and went, well, that's a stupid bloody question, isn't it? But my favourite movie this year, I don't know. I just came out of watching Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino's ninth film, and I was like, that was, to me, the perfect movie. I thought it was absolutely fantastic. But then, you know, I watched Hobbs and Shaw the other day, and I was like, this is brilliant. The Rock stops a helicopter taking off just because he's The Rock.
Indeed. And it's cliffhanging. No spoilers, but still. And as far as Once Upon a Time is concerned, just listen to the voice of Adam West there working into the soundtrack in all sorts of ways in his role as Batman. It's amazing. Extraordinary. There's so many things we can actually talk about, but we need to mention, of course, it is all part and parcel of the 25th anniversary of the National Lottery. 25 years, as we said. You can go to national-lottery.co.uk for details about that. As far as Cinema Day is concerned, would you recommend, Alex, that cinemaday.co.uk would be the best go-to place to go to?
I certainly would, yeah. And if you're playing the lottery on Saturday, all you need to do is take your lottery ticket to a participating cinema and they'll swap it for a free ticket so you can enjoy whatever movie you like on Sunday.
And I think actually, reflections back on the whole thing, it was probably the fact that I saw Godzilla, King of Monsters in a cinema which wasn't particularly comfortable, which is why I kind of would put that down as my worst movie of the year so far. Probably if I'd actually seen it in a more comfort-based thing, I might have actually sort of raised the bar a wee bit more and said, actually, it's not too bad, really, but still.
Did you not even like the little bit? I love the bit, though, where King Ghidorah just comes out of the ice. I grew up watching the old Toho Studio monsters and destroy all monsters, and to me, seeing these monsters brought up to date with the latest CGI, I was like, oh, that is cool when Ghidorah comes out of the ice.
That's true, yeah. And you had a Stranger Things actress in there as well, and she was okay, Bobby Millie Brown or whatever, so it all works on that basis. Two final questions. Alex, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I have had a very delightful telephonic link with you.
It's a customer satisfaction thing. We always like to encourage folk to actually engage in this, if only to keep the meerkats happy. Will you be kind enough to join us again? Will we come back again and speak more about movies and other such stuff?
I would love to, Alex.
Splendid. I still feel that if Zoe Jameson isn't available to actually go along to the cinema with you, take a meerkat. I think it's very important. Zoe, your thoughts on meerkats and accompanying you to movies?
Yeah, I think bring them to the cinema. That's great.
Exactly. There should be meerkat-friendly screenings. I mean, you have other kind of friendly screenings. So, and Lord knows Alexander and Sergei regularly actually promote the cinematic experience. So take a meerkat to the cinema. Go along, National Cinema Day. As you heard, if you purchase a lottery ticket on Saturday, keep that lottery ticket and you'll win in any case because you'll have a free cinema ticket if you exchange it on the following Sunday at a cinema that's participating. It can't be bad to celebrate 25 years of life and the National Lottery. Of course, there is the other line, Zoe, which is if you want to actually win the National Lottery, simply don't buy a ticket. You win every week. meanwhile, back with this button here.
Zoe Jameson, from Northern Ireland to the Country Show. Probably the best scholar of veterinary science the Midweek Drive has welcomed for many a year.
Quite right, too. Zoe, I'm not sure what you're getting up to with Jessica Higgins on July the 14th, when you seem to be doing all sorts of strange and miraculous wonder. I mean, it's almost as though you're in the west coast of California. What was going on there?
We're not on the west coast today, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. We're in Dorset today, but Jess has got a job in Kent, so hopefully she's there.
Well, that's important. But then again, how long can you stay in Kent without desperately trying to leave? You know, it's a different line entirely. Last week, of course, we didn't manage to connect with you because you were doing dark deeds in deepest, darkest Dorset. Can you share with us? Or is it a case of, no, I'm afraid I'm sworn to the veterinary code of silence?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I was definitely lost in the depths of Dorset last week. So, yeah, unfortunately, we didn't get to communicate. But We're still there this week, but you've managed to catch us, so that's quite good.
Well, the great news is, of course, I just received a notification that for this year's wonderful, joyous activity in Burley, the horse trials, of course, we will not have any plastic bottles at all. If we want any water, we'll simply have to bring our own containers to actually fill up with water. So there we are, taking Carol, the press officers there, to obviously take it to the next stage, basically. So
yeah, that's excellent, isn't it?
Yeah, well, exactly. Hopefully, the Dewberry team are fully acknowledged in that, because I suspect the same thing might go for champagne as well. But never mind.
Yeah, we're very good at recycling.
Yeah, no doubt. Or indeed upcycling, Zoe, because that's the way forward.
Exactly, yeah.
Now, in the studio, Fergus is back with us, and we've got a young man who you haven't spoken to before, because basically he decided to actually come to the end of his first year and say, right, that's it, I've finished with the midweek drive for my season, so I'm heading back to Bedfordshire, but he's making a flying visit back to Lincoln today before, as we said, going over to the United States of America to say, yay, Donald, you're my man, or various other things as he comes off the plane. You know, I'm sure you will, Rory, you know.
You've painted me to be some sort of villain here. Abandon the midweek drive to go, you know, rub shoulders with Donald Trump.
At the end of the day, it's what happens, you know. You've got to realise, you know, students will go, they'll graduate, some will come back. So, I mean, you know, Ben, we hardly speak to him these days, do we? You know, he's in London, he's still happily sort of working through that process, but never mind.
Who's Ben?
So, Zoe, you were listening there, hopefully, whether you wanted to or not, really, to our film critic, our namesake, Alex Zane. And one of the key questions that we put it to him was, what irritating habits do people actually have when they go to the cinema? Or are there pet peeves? Peeves that you actually have, not about yourself, because clearly Zoe Jameson is perfect. We know that to be the case, Zoe, so you don't have to say it. But what about other folk who are in the cinema, do you think, I wish they'd stop eating that kind of popcorn, or slurping that kind of drink, and so on?
Eating crisps, they're so loud.
Yeah.
I've not heard of many people eating crisps, but I'm definitely going to be watching them like a hawk next time.
Yes. And swooping down on the whole thing. Rory, you've had the crisp experience?
I have had the crisp experience. That sounds quite weird, but no.
It's the title of your autobiography, The Crisp Experience. Rory, The Crisp Experience.
It's just so loud, because opening crisp packets are loud, the rustling to get the crisp is loud, and the subsequent eating of the crisp
and the
crunching is loud.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
So it's none of it is just what you want, really.
Yeah, because we were, when I went to the cinema on Saturday with my dad, and we had, you know, our kind of bags of sweets, and we basically thought, we're going to open this now. It's not going to cause any fuss. But when the film's on. Yeah.
And you did, presumably.
Yeah, we didn't cause any fuss. No.
And you both are heroes for it, Fergus.
And also bring your own bottled drinks. Like, why do you need to bring the...
Because
McDonald's
we like
ones?
To give the confectionaries people, the concessionary stand, considerable amounts of finance to actually work through that.
That's right, yeah. That's
always competitively priced. That's the important thing. Actually, what has been the last movie you've seen, Zoe? Because I suspect you're such a hard-working lass that with your veterinary studies, with the Dewberry stuff, etc., going to the movies, okay, so, well, I can only squeeze it in 2 hours on a Wednesday night.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when I was listening along, and I actually can't remember the last movie I saw in the cinema. Mm-hmm. However, I do want to go and see The Lion King, so maybe I'll go and do that.
Yeah. Oh, have you seen the original, though?
Yeah, I have.
Okay, I was just wondering.
That's why I want to go and see the next one.
It's pretty much the same as the original, actually, if we're being brutally honest about the Lion King remake, with the exception of Rory Atkinson, obviously. You've got the James Earl Jones character, you've got a few other sort of characters that are actually in there, and it's pretty much John Favreau's shot-by-shot remake of the original. Mm.
Did Rory Atkinson not
return
for... So
worth going to see or not?
No, it's John Favreau.
As a fan, and allowing for the fact that the Circle of Life is part of a whole experience, then I'd say, yeah, Zoe, it probably is, actually.
I would recommend going to see it, yeah. Just to see the CGI, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because when all said and done, computer-generated imagery is the future of cinema.
Yeah.
Wow. Someone said the other day, they were like, they've put so much effort into making the animals look realistic, but they still talk.
Exactly. And as the official politically correct version of Dr. Doolittle, which I know you will be, Zoe, because you can talk to the animals, jump and squeak and squawk with the animals, and they can talk to you, or is that just the customers? I'm not going to say anything about branding, etc. But yeah, we know that talking to the animals... I mean, actually, to be fair, animals do understand us. I mean, we've got a return to Robin. Robin has actually had a poorly canine today, Robin Pierce, and we were so worried about the canine images that we weren't sure whether Bo was going to be with us, whether Robin would actually be with us. As you can see in the photograph there, he's looking after the patient, who's obviously resting comfortably and going very well. Yeah, I think she had a little lump that was removed from that point of view. So, I mean...
I hope she's keeping well.
Well, at the end of the day, you know, we know that if the positive vibes of Zoe Jameson Force can be transmitted through the airwaves from Dorset up to Wales, then... You know,
wishing her a speedy recovery.
Exactly. That's the key thing. My question was, do you feel that you can relate well to animals and connect with them and actually, you know, bond with them, shall we say?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose it depends on the animal, but yeah, in some respects, yeah.
Which is good.
Some animals I like better than others, but...
Hey, that's ever since George Orwell actually wrote Animal Farm, that's been the case. Some are actually born more equal than others and so on, but let's not go political in this particular stage. Lord knows the world is full of that, and I think probably Angela will be just sitting down at present with Boris and saying, you must be joking, or words to that effect. But still, yeah, that's a Euro line entirely. Rory, you reminded me that you were involved, or you know people are involved, with a choral sequence at the Naval Cadets or something, or a choir?
A choir, yes. Over here in Lincoln, there will be a RAF cadet choir going on in the Lincoln Drill Hall on the 24th of August, where air cadets from up and down the country have been chosen to perform a range of songs, which should be very good.
And that is, in fact, this very Saturday.
This very Saturday.
So you see, 24th. It's important we raise that now to give people the chance to actually book in their Saturday, bank holiday weekend, and all the rest of the bits and pieces, just to say, let's have a listen to these cadets. We haven't spoken to them as such, but I'm sure if you've got people who want to speak after the event, so they can even spoke after the event and speak and do whatever they wish. They can utter words, and we'll try and make some sort of sense. We'll do that as well, which is great. Zoe, any questions you'd like to put to either Rory, coming into his second year of studies, reading journalism and creative writing at the University of Lincoln, or Fergus, of course, as you well know, is coming to his last few months of a postgraduate study that he's been doing as an MA in journalism?
Well, maybe I'll ask Rory how he's off to the States for.
Yeah, how long?
I'm going to be off to the States for 2.5 weeks.
Wow.
I leave on the 27th and return on the 12th. So,
that's exciting.
Very exciting.
I suppose you have to go for 2 weeks in order to recover from the jet lag.
Well, it's mostly because the States is so massive.
Is it quite big?
You forget sometimes.
I'm journalism, not geography.
In order to say, if you travel from one end of the UK to another, you consider that's, you know, travelling, or like travel from the UK to Europe, you're travelling. If you're from one side of Texas to another, it's like, what's the big deal?
Well, you know.
I mean, we were having a little review of Tarantino's work with respect to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and I have a suspicion that Zoe might find this particularly interesting. And if not Zoe, she could certainly pass it on as a viable thing to consider for Charles from Du Barry. Only 50 seconds, but I think you'll find it a particularly useful and valuable insight into the male of the species, Zoe.
Four men on a search. Man different, living his own way, searching, discovering numero uno, the new thing in colognes for men. In all the world, there are only four basic masculine scents. Here's the best of each: numero uno gold, numero uno green, numero uno red, numero uno silver. Four numero uno colognes, all different, all wild. Find yours with the searcher kit, a jigger of each scent. Then get a full-size bottle of the one that makes it for you. Numero uno!
Yeah, I think Charles would go down well with respect to numero uno in four basic scents. I mean, I don't know, Zoe, does that help at all?
Yeah, maybe we need a full-size model.
Yeah, I don't know where we're going with this one, and I possibly don't really want to, but never mind. That's life. We will be going to a musician called Danny Vaughan, who will be releasing his latest single in a matter of moments from now, all being well. Zoe, who would you like to ask you the last two questions? Would it be Fergus or would it be Rory?
Let's give them to Rory this week.
Okay. Zoe, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today on the show?
I have indeed.
And will you be joining us again soon?
Hopefully, not from the depths of Dorset.
There's nothing wrong with Dorset,
There's
really.
There's nothing wrong with Dorset. It's, you know,
no,
it's perfectly fine.
No, exactly. I mean, you're closer to us than Rory will be in a week or so's time.
He'll
That's very true.
In the depths of downtown Los Angeles. Anyway, it's just a rainbow of marvellous colours. Resemblances to Bruce Springsteen, Tom Waits and Don Henley. Not Marmalade, a Scottish band who we're just hearing there with Rainbow, but our next guest on the programme, the welcome return of Danny Vaughan. How are you, Danny?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Very good indeed. And Danny, are we connecting with you in Dublin once again?
No, I'm actually down in southern Spain.
Oh, Spain. You see that? So even further south than Dublin. It's amazing.
Yeah,
you know?
Just a bit, yeah.
And this latest album that you produced, and we're going to listen to the title track, or one of the tracks from in a few seconds, effectively, first and foremost, a labour of love, and beyond the immediate support of your fans, you genuinely had no expectations as to what would happen next. You have been stunned and amazed at the incredible reviews it's been receiving, both in the rock press and well beyond. So, you know, well, why are you so surprised? Do you not recognise the quality of your work, Danny? For goodness sakes.
I don't know if anyone in the middle of their work recognises whether or not they're doing good work or not. I was lucky enough once to have a question-answer conversation with Roger Daltrey, and I asked him if when they were in the middle of making Tommy, like about halfway through, do they all look at each other and go, oh my God, you know, we're about to just be, this is completely groundbreaking. And he's like, we had no idea. So we were just doing the work, you know, and that was that. And I think that really does sort of cover it. You move forward in hopes that you're doing positive things with your momentum. But in the end, you have no way of knowing how it's going to fall on the ears of the listener.
That is very true. Wise words. Now, in the studio and presumably even beyond in terms of the Siren team of expanded midweek drivers, we've got Rory and Fergus, who are very keen to listen to The Shadow of King John. Let's face it, Magna Carta, back in the day, you know, opened up a whole range of things there. And also particularly interesting in terms of we have a copy of Magna Carta in Lincoln. So it's put together on that
basis.
That's
right. I've been up and seen it, actually.
Did it inspire the song at all, Danny?
No, it didn't. It's inspired by the fact that I lived in Limerick, Ireland, during the time that was economically referred to as the Celtic Tiger, when Ireland was very, very strong economically. And then when I moved out and I came back to Limerick City years later, and all the companies that had been given breaks and land deals to build their factories, and, you know, to which entire towns had built their businesses around, once it came actually time to pay taxes on that land that they'd had for free for 10 years, they all buggered off to other countries. And it left Limerick at the time in a reasonably sad state, people sleeping rough, you know, closed storefronts, and it made me very, very sad. And that's when the song started to come to mind, because I wanted to capture something of the sort of the way my friends and neighbors feel about things. But yeah, we're down, but we're still us. We're still here. We're going to stay, you know, we still understand, you know, the fight. We still understand the crack. We're going to keep right on going.
Well, we're going to be talking about that and more, and indeed saying where Danny can be seen on tour in a matter of seconds from now. But actually, I say 3.5 minutes or so, because it's time for your good self, Danny Vaughan. We've even got the official video lined up to actually look together on that. We'll try and fire off so we even get synchronicity. So we'll work our way through this. It's Danny Vaughan and The Shadow of King John on Siren Radio.
This town has had its salad days until the bills came due. Politicals all left her to her own. Maybe you ran out of luck, or maybe luck ran out of you. But rain or shine, this city is my home. They're playing tennis at the prison wall while the dogs are on the track, and Newton Perry crumbles brick by brick. And they're dancing in the ruins down by Dolan's, that's the crack, and buying lotto tickets double quick. So you can choose your poison, take your pick. And the boys in still there to catch a view. They're climbing up the treaty stone while the same old music plays. In Cruise Street they're shopping till they're blue. Well, what else is there left for us to do? And the boys in the band played on, and the stripes on the tiger are gone, gone, gone. While the water of the Shannon, it flows on. King John. In the shadow of King John.
serve the black in buckets when the wolf tones are in town. And forget about big money's bait and switch. They're singing loud enough in Thorman Park to bring the rafters down and set a rock shed up without a hitch. When the Munster boys come storming down the pitch, and the boys in the band fade on, and the water of the Shannon, it flows ever on and on. They put the teeth out from the tiger's head, now he's gone, 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 long gone, long gone, from the shadow of King John, from the shadow of King.
They've pulled the teeth out from the tiger's head. He's long, long gone. And the Shadow of King John. I think that deserves a hearty round of applause, gentlemen.
Oh, absolutely.
Thank you very kindly.
Very good. And you may have noticed, Danny, we had to do a teeny, teeny edit in terms of that there, because just as you had a little S-T sort of word there, we just had to do a slight mini
Fair
version.
Enough.
Just, exactly. But other than that, let's find out what the team made of it. Fergus, your thoughts on the Shadow King John?
I actually loved it. The kind of ode to Limerick, going to one's hometown, and all the references I understood a few of them, the wolf tones, had to learn about.
The Irish dancing?
Yeah, the Irish dancing. Thoman Park, of course,
Monster.
Monster rugby, of course.
Yeah, well, as I said, I lived there for almost 5 years, so if you don't start supporting Munster, you're kind of an oddball in town.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I just fell right in with
you have,
that.
You have to support your province, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Rory.
I really respect how, whilst the song is about something that's,
means something.
Quite sad.
It's not like Simon Powell's going to take it and say, I'd like the next X Factor winner to actually sing this. Sorry, Simon, but I don't think he is,
I like how the song's about something that's, very sad and that kind of ruined a lot of people's lives, but it's also quite,
Upbeat.
Upbeat. There is that, I love the melody of it. It's so good.
And in terms of the interesting things and points that were there, Rory did say, slight resemblance to End of the World as We Know It.
Just the beginning of the chorus.
Just
the beginning of the chorus.
I hadn't caught that. You're not far off there. That's definitely unintentional, but I can't say it's wrong.
You see, I did say, Danny, we have discerning teams on the Midweek Drivette here to actually work our way through it. It's part of the album, of course, Myths, Legends and Lies, which is available and will actually just be a treasure in its own right, really. Now, looking ahead, we see that this weekend, this Friday, you're at the Clooney in Newcastle. Is that Newcastle on Tyne?
It is, yeah. Wow. I'm in London tomorrow night as well.
The Black Heart in London on the 22nd of August. Then you've got Stoke-on-Trent at the 11th, at 11 on Stoke-on-Trent, very confusing, at the 29th. You're back in Birmingham with the Asylum on August the 30th. And then the European tour kicks off in earnest, of course, in October. The Czech Republic, Austria, Germany, Mannheim, Switzerland, Greece. Thankfully, before any kind of Brexit takes place. So,
I tried to time that as intelligently as possible.
I would have thought so. It's important, Who knows what can be happening, but still.
I'm going to take the month of November, like everybody else, and just see what the heck is going to happen.
Yeah. I say stock up on tins of chickpeas. That would be my advice, really.
Really? Why chickpeas?
You can make a lot of them. Lentils and chickpeas.
A very versatile food.
Listen to the postgraduates there,
That was kind of a let them eat hummus kind of comment, I think.
Exactly. It's a thought. It's a 21st century Marie Antoinette-esque thing, but what the hey. Fergus, any questions you want to put to Danny about life, the universe, and so on?
Who are your kind of main influences there? Because, obviously we saw in the video that your band is obviously the unique thing of having a guitarist, a drummer, and a accordion player. Mm.
All looking very good.
Are there any bands that you kind of take inspiration from and maybe have a similar format, or are there any kind of...
As far as inspiration goes, the album itself is so... It's all over the shop, song-wise. If you go from song to song, one song doesn't sound anything like the other. There's some dark, swampy blues. There's some straight-up folk. And I was really attempting to step into the ring with some of my songwriting heroes, and that would be, as formerly mentioned, anybody from Sting to John Hiatt to Charlie Sexton to Tom Waits, people like that. So I didn't have any restrictions, so I was able to kind of pull on influences from all over the place.
This, Mr. Vaughan, is your masterpiece, according to the Rock Pit. 14 songs don't follow formula, they don't need to, they just sound utterly magnificent. 10 out of 10, according to Andy Thornley of Maximum Volume Music. If you want some credibility when you go over to Los Angeles, Rory, I think you know where to go.
No, I definitely do.
Exactly. Spread the word. Danny, it's been sensational, even sensational in all sorts of ways there. I should actually ask you then, no relation to Robert Vaughan, of course, the fabulous former Napoleon solo in The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
No, nor Stevie Ray, unfortunately.
Just wanted to clarify that. But, you know, yeah. But you're in. I mean, probably Robert Vaughan is looking back and looking down from heaven now, saying, if only I could actually claim Danny Vaughan as being part of my lineage. But, you know, even in Magnificent Seven and various other things, The Protectors, he didn't sing that well. Danny, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
I have indeed. I thank you very much for having me on.
A general delight. You can, of course, go to dannyvaughan.com. That's dannyvaughn.com to find out all the details that we've been talking about. Follow it through. Will you be kind enough to return again? Whereabouts in Spain are you at present, by the way, Danny?
All the way down south, Estepona on the Costa del Sol.
So actually not too far away from Gibraltar.
No, really? I'm about 30 miles away, and good. It's been August is not the best time to be down here. It can get brutally warm.
Well, and also, major climate conditions have been affecting the cauliflowers in Spain and the cabbages. But let's not go there, because we don't want to panic people. I mean, there's enough worries already, and you know, we'll work through that. Will you be kind enough to return? Will you come back to us, Danny Vaughan? Do you see what I did there? Come back, Danny Vaughan.
Anytime. Of course, anytime you like to have me.
A round of applause for Danny Vaughan, please. Yay!
The Addams Family, Wonder Woman, The Green Hornet, Bonanza, Murder, She Wrote, The Mod Squad, Honey West, Ironside. Just some of the series which have benefited from the writing and producing genius of Arthur Weingarten. And now the legendary writer is live on the Midweek Drive. Prepare to be amazed.
Hopefully with a modem that actually works. Arthur, welcome to us. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. Well, we've been celebrating the fact that it's 25 years since the first national lottery launched in Britain, but even more significant in 2019, next month in September, it'll be the 35th anniversary since Murder, She Wrote went out on air for the first time. 35 years, Arthur. Since Murder, She Wrote, effectively.
I wish I hadn't heard that.
I could have said it's 50 years since Ramblin' Hot Cock Deceased actually sort of went through the whole process, but you know.
that 50th anniversary is the next problem.
Oh, yeah. That's right. That's next week. It's the line there. But 35 years. And the great news is it's part of a series of classic TV shows, which a recent poll in the United Kingdom, because let's face it, we've got to ask people what their favourite TV shows are on a time-to-time basis, is one of the all-time favourites. 84% of British people surveyed considered that classic TV shows such as Murder, She Wrote, Heart to Heart and Starsky and Hutch rank amongst the country's most treasured throwbacks.
Isn't it something? And may I interrupt with something that is of self-importance to us?
Of course.
But for the moment, Annette and I have created a show which is getting some really good interest over there called Cult Heaven. And it's just that. It's the celebration of all the shows that you just mentioned, plus all of the others, the Brits and the American Uncle and Randall and Saint and all of that. And it's audience interaction and all that. And it's getting some very good interest. So we're hoping that in our old age we'll have something new to look forward to.
I'm not surprised. Again, Heart to Heart actually started this Sunday 40 years ago in Britain. 40 years ago
Isn't
since... In fact, in many ways, actually, I could almost see that Stephanie Powers and Robert Wagner actually modelled the whole activities on yourself and Annette in many ways, Arthur. I could have probably been Max or Freeway the Butler, one of those two things from that sort of point of view, and sort of you've done the whole thing. This is Mrs. Weingarten, and she's gorgeous, that sort of line, be sort of there. So I'll work on it. I'll work on the delivery. But we'll be talking a bit more about this with a colleague, a TV writer called Andrew Collins in a couple of days' time. But I did want to actually raise this with your own range of experiences, Arthur, because one of the things which has been considered here in terms of why is it that episodes, or indeed pilot shows like Murder, She Wrote and the aforementioned ones, grab the attention of entire nations, and they cease to sort of lose their charm long after the show has kind of passed its final episodes. I mean, I know Phil Leonis regularly talks about getting a satisfactory conclusion to a series, making sure things wrap up perfectly, etc. But in terms of, as I say, that whole essence of, is there a magic? I know in times past, Arthur, you've suggested there might be a formula, there might be a way forward, but is the pilot ultimately one of the most important things that a TV studio can actually come up with to actually grab people and say, we want to stick with this show?
Yes, I say yes. And the reason I say yes is something that I never thought, given this world in which so much turmoil, anger and pain and suffering throughout the world going on, the shows you mentioned, and these are shows that I all did. I did Heart to Heart and, as a writer, not a producer, but for air, and I wrote several of those and Starsky and Hutch. And if you look at Murder, She Wrote in this, all of those types of shows, they're nonviolent. They have murder at their heart, but they're passive murders. They are not an active act of malice and that. And Annette and I talk about this all the time. She just posted something on her Facebook page, which I found fascinating. Of I don't know how many dozens of countries that people look at her website and talk about Randall and Hopkirk from Peru and Iceland. And I find it, because I don't use a computer, I am always in wonder, you know, of how this happens. But we talk about the fact that Randall and Hopkirk had a murder in every single one, just like Columbo and this one and that one. But it was a passive murder. You didn't dwell on blood. And I believe that that's what lingers in a nostalgia for shows that are comforting, where you have a closure at the end, not an open-end thing, but a closure, and yet you're brought into a procedural thing in which you can live outside your normal daily life. That's why mysteries are so encompassing and always will be. But I do believe that. I believe it is non-violence that lasts longer than all the violent shows.
Particularly interesting, given, of course, the recent Tarantino movie Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. But let's not go there. I mean, your thoughts, gentlemen, in terms of what Arthur's been sharing with us there. I mean, Rory, some of those shows might be completely new to you. Use YouTube. They're all available there. What are your thoughts on his thesis that actually, yeah, there is a nostalgia for looking back to shows where there might have been a murder, there might have been an incident, etc., but ultimately there was a kind of resolution at the end?
I think that anything that... I think Arthur is right, first of all. Any show that has a kind of comforting feeling, kind of more... It plays into nostalgia easier. Because when you think back to it, you're like, oh, I remember when, you know, this moment happened, or all of these iconic, you know, scenes, or all of these different things happen. And then you can go, oh, yeah, do you remember that with some of your mates? Or And it's those kind of moments that, you know, the more a show kind of... is comforting, the more it kind of evokes those feelings, the more of it those it will have. And
strangely,
the
we don't get with Love Island, perhaps.
Oh my goodness, don't even go on about that show.
I'm delighted to find that Annette is actually finding to connect with Ian Ogilvy via Facebook as well. Actually, I'm looking through the whole thing. It's marvellous. This computer stuff that's been set up, Arthur, honestly, you know, you don't know what you're missing. We'll have to get you a sort of crash course in terms of using the sort of various bits and pieces. I just like the sort of notion. That's wonderful. And Fergus, same thoughts?
Yeah, very similar thoughts. I mean, with my two older brothers, when we basically speak to each other, a lot of the stuff we talk about is just references from TV shows we watched as kids or something. Just like, because I'm part of a community, obviously. You know, one of the biggest obvious ones is obviously The Simpsons. I mean, a huge majority of people have watched The Simpsons, one of those watch shows.
It goes on and on.
It goes on and on and on. And do they will say it's not as good as it used to be? It's the Arsene Wenger of television shows, I call it.
It's not as good as the Flintstones.
Nah.
And the Flintstones could set a scene for a whole range of...
Flintstones, for me, past the age of 10, done with it. Wacky Races, top cast.
When was the last time you saw the Flintstones, Fergus?
Oh, about 14, 15.
You've got to give it another chance.
If people are like Flintstones, you haven't seen Top Cat. Top Cat's
But that's just Sergeant Bilker with animation, let's face it.
Yeah.
Arthur, we've got a little treat for your good self, because I know you appreciate the joys of commercials on American television, and I think given Adam West and Burt Ward, of course, known for introducing the whole essence of camp with respect to William Dozier's incarnation of Batman, I suspect, Arthur, you might just appreciate this next minute. Are you ready for this?
Yes, go ahead.
This is Batman.
And Robin.
With exclusive news for KHJ listeners.
It's the Batphone Secret Number Contest presented by Boss Radio.
There's a terrific prize for the first KHJ listener to guess the secret number of our Batphone.
You've seen us answering the Batphone on TV. It's a special hotline Commissioner Gordon uses to contact us whenever there's trouble.
There are 7 digits in the Batphone's secret number. Listen to what you'll win if yours is the first correct answer received by KHJ.
You'll visit Batman and me at 20th Century Fox and be our guest for lunch at the studio.
Then you'll ride to the Batcave in the Batmobile, where Robin and I will present you with a 1966 console color television set.
To visit us and win the color TV, just guess the secret Batphone number.
Watch for Robin and me on Channel 7 Wednesday and Thursday nights. And keep it on KHJ for more clues in the Batphone Secret Number Contest.
Is that wonderful, Arthur? In 1966, you could win a colour television and get a trip to the Batcave.
Wow. Holy Horlicks.
Exactly. I can tell you, I can sense the inner Green Hornet person coming out for you there. You know, much more focusing on the more serious Britt Reed incarnation, with, of course, Bruce Lee as Kato, who, again, is not doing any justice, I believe, in the Tarantino movie, basically. But still, that's another line entirely. People, Bruce Lee fans have been saying this outrageous, Mr. Tarantino, what you've actually portrayed Bruce Lee as being. But I suppose, have we progressed, or is that a case of, do we miss that kind of charm, Arthur? Should we actually have more sort of competition? Maybe it could be something which the cult TV could actually open up with.
Yes, yeah, there's no doubt. You know, one always ravages the past for things. Shakespeare did it, and we continue to do it today. There is a big difference, though. When Annette and I were putting together this presentation, and we went over all the shows that were popular that we did in two countries, and then I did over there. The number of remakes is just astounding, and none of them last. None of them last. Mm. It's almost as if it's the moth to the flame. They have to do it, even though evidence says the remake doesn't work.
Some people might even say The Prisoner has fallen into that trap, but never mind. It's another line entirely for another routine. Arthur, the good news is the phone line stayed constant. Hurrah!
Yes, how do you like that? Yes, well, that's because of you. It wouldn't dare do anything to your show.
Well, I don't know, Arthur. Sometimes you never know when the CIA actually get hold of the sort of things we discuss in code on this show, where we go. But still, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the program this evening?
I've had a wonderful time, as always. I appreciate it.
Now,
yes.
I think, actually, Rory, when you're going to the West Coast, you're not going to get down as far as San Diego, are you?
No, unfortunately. San Diego will be one of the places that I'll be missing out on.
But, Arthur, given that the young Rory is going to be heading off in 4 days now?
Yeah, around 4 days' time.
4 days for 2.5
and
English weeks.
What are you doing?
Well, I'm going to the West Coast of America just on holiday, just to see what it's like, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean.
No, I thought you were going to do some work in L.A. or something.
Oh, I wish. That's the dream.
If the deals come up, he's a creative writer. Who knows what could happen?
Yes, exactly. While you're there, explore the territory.
Let's face it. Everybody walking down the streets will have some sort of deal for you, Rory. Just be very careful. That's all. Just very careful. Arthur, it's been awesome. We'll speak with you again in September. Is that okay?
Yes, that's perfect.
Well, then it's time for Burt Bacharach.
What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little of. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. Enough to climb. There are oceans and rivers enough to cross, enough to last till the end of time. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just to live up. But the world is love, is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another meadow. There are cornfields and wheat fields enough to grow. There are sunbeams and moonbeams enough to shine. Oh, listen, Lord, if you want to know. What the world is now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just
Hey, this is Larry Nemechek, Dr. Trek, and you're listening to the Midweek Drive.
Of course, the great thing with the power of Larry Nemechek is he could go to the Guardian at the edge on the City of Forever and actually go back in time without altering anything and actually manage to insert his little promo for the Midweek Drive right in the middle of Jackie DeShannon. Very impressed, Larry. Very impressed indeed. It's nice. It's a good one. After all, risk. Risk is our business. That's what this mission is all about. I know.
That's why we're aboard.
It's why you may dissent without prejudice. Do I hear any opposing arguments? Of course, it's one of the most famous speeches, the Gettysburg Address speech in many ways of the original series Star Trek, Return to Tomorrow, which is featured in full force in the latest edition of Star Trek the magazine, Star Trek Monthly, in, of course, your Fistful of Data Solario, where Alan Andres of Brooklyn, Massachusetts, actually asked Larry over Twitter, can you determine from different drafts of Return to Tomorrow who authored Kirk's Risk is Our Business speech and when it was added to the screenplay? The context is important as it was written around the same time the New York Times was calling Project Apollo a needless gamble. Yeah. You see, 30 years ago, Star Trek had just started being screened in Britain. No, 50 years ago, Star Trek had just started being screened in Britain. 50 years since we started on the BBC, seeing the replacement for Doctor Who. And back in the day, of course, when it was contemporary, Apollo had had challenges, etc. What fantastic sort of way in which the Star Trek ethos of Roddenberry could actually impact on the Apollo programme and probably just nudging public opinion back to saying, OK, Neil, you can have some more money for your friend and Buzz to go out and play.
It happened just that way, too.
That's good stuff. OK, we've got Rory in the studio, we've got Fergus in the studio. I don't think we've spoken since you came back from the San Diego Comic Con, where, OK, as we know, no DC Comic stands, so the notion of finding out where you are on the basis of, go to the DC Comics area, it'll be there. No, that wasn't there this year. Is it the end of comics? Star Trek, thankfully, was there. You were there, Larry. All sorts of exciting things with respect to Picard, Lower Decks, and I've got to say, sorry, Phil Leonis is listening, but I've actually seen a documentary which I would classify as being even better than From the Truth is Out There. It's What I Left Behind, Ira Stephen Bear and colleagues, Deep Space Nine. If you want to see how documentaries should be made, if you want to see, just go out and get it now. Purchase it. It's there. $7.99. Just go for it. All right, $9.99 if you want the high-definition version. But, you know, just go and get it now. Larry, I've said my piece. I just had to get that out there. Share with us your thoughts on San Diego Comic Con.
That sounds like an endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
San Diego was it's amazing to me. I don't think of myself as a veteran, but it's starting to pile up now. I didn't go to San Diego until about 1906 or 7, which is a lifetime ago, and it exploded since then. I went ahead with friends that had me come down because it had nothing to do with Star Trek. And I didn't know why I should go, but just since 2015, there was still almost no footprint for Star Trek down there, and since the 50th anniversary, every year, and now with the return to small screen, CBS, and now we've got the merger in the works, but ever since then, the footprint, the exposure for Star Trek at Comic-Con has grown by leaps and bounds, and this year it was huge, even bigger than last year, and yeah, all the big announcements were made for that. And of course, part of that is, since then we've had the Star Trek Vegas convention a couple weeks later, and last year we had the meltdown Twitter moment when Sir Patrick came out and announced Star Trek Picard, and that sent
the return of Hugh
and around the world. Were you, joy. Right.
You got Hugh is back. You got Seven of Nine back. You got
all of that, right? Oh, the trailer, yeah, this year. What I was going to say was that was such big news with Seven and Data or B9 or a hologram of Data, whatever it is. All of that huge trailer happening, and then almost lost was, yes, there will be Pike and Spock and Number One short treks, and there's the The new animated series debuted all their characters, and Orion characters.
Star Trek Discovery now in the 32nd century, even two centuries after the Legion of Superheroes, because they went 900 years into the future. So from the 23rd century, they're into the 32nd century. That's what I call long-term planning.
Thank you for that insight versus the Justice League. But right, all of that, there was even pushback from people at Vegas thinking, well, there'll be even more news because they have to top what happened last year with the Picard announcement. And there was a lot more crumbs, there were a lot more details. Nothing big happened at Star Trek Vegas. Comic-Con got all the big headlines, and some people were even annoyed at that there at Vegas. But in the big picture, it was a huge two-week span. It was a huge Comic-Con. And Comic-Con is where Star Trek is comparing itself, not to its own fans, but to the other, I always say, the big boys at the big fandom table, at the big franchise table. And most of the pundits were saying that Marvel and Star Trek were the big winners of Comic-Con, which is amazing that Star Trek is back.
Larry, once we knew that you were interviewing the director of The Cage, Robert Butler, it was a no-brainer. I mean, you know, I would have said to George Mann, much as I know George enjoyed meeting up with Mike Mignola, he enjoyed almost meeting Patrick Stewart. He was talking about the future of comics. It's interesting that we'll hear all this. It's a bonus feature we'll put onto the Stone Tapes, actually, for podcast listeners. But we knew that the Robert Butler thing. And how was he? How was the Butlermeister?
The Butlermeister was wonderful. He'd been a guest on Portal 47 about 3 years ago. I had been in contact with his son, and he's 91 now, so he was in his late 80s, and he was fine then because that was remote. We were on. This was live. His son and his son's partner brought him down, and he was wonderful. I actually had an SRO room without standing because they won't let people stand in those rooms, and we had to turn people away. It was amazing. It wasn't a big room. It was only about 300 people, but it was just spellbinding to watch him talk. And it's not that we talked about so many details. I included things and he talked about them, and I really had a lot of good questions for him. But what was the core of it was him just talking about, as a director, being a truth to being a storyteller and being truthful to an audience, and even making the point of saying he didn't care about politics and budget and all of that. I mean, given parameters, his job was to just make the best show he could. And the bottom line was he did a lot of pilots. He did the pilot for Batman. He won two Emmys, the TV award in the States here. He won an Emmy for a Robert Holden show that's forgotten now called The Blue Knight. But he won the Emmy for the pilot for Hill Street Blues. So he was no stranger to TV history and making a groundbreaking effort. So for him to have directed Star Trek, he was still a very young director.
And personally,
and
I
then
probably
a few months later directed Batman. Yeah. I mean, but anyway, he was great. He had that crowd spellbound. It was an amazing hour, and I'll cherish it always.
Hollywood royalty. You see the way, Rory, we've interwoven Batman, sort of aspects of Adam Ward, Burt Ward and Adam West, I should say, mixed with all sorts of other things. Still to mention, of course, that Star Trek, the Jar Jar Abrams, was it J.J. Abrams? I know, some people actually don't like him, but J.J. Abrams actually, his incarnation, 10 years old this year. Star Trek Generations, with, of course, a movie I did quite
25
like.
Years
25 years ago. The Final Frontier. Yes, I liked it. Even the Sing Song and the Campfire, 30 years old. The Search for Spock, 35 years old. And I refuse to go down the line that Robin Pierce will say, oh, yes, Star Trek, the motionless picture. Rubbish. It was Star Trek, the motion picture. The human adventure is just beginning. A wonderful 40 years of young. 40 years. Of Star Trek.
40 years. And The Cage, The Cage Robert Butler directed, is actually 55.
Exactly.
55.
Yeah. I have indeed just ordered a Star Trek t-shirt, which is celebrating 53 years of magic since the series came to an end. But that's the... And I know I probably won't be wearing it at lectures next seminar, but unless, of course, there's substantial funds available. Rory and Fergus, you need to go online, sort out Netflix, address those key things. Sadly, there's so much to pack into the show, we've still got to squeeze in Tessa Snart's Tune of the Week and then Robin Pierce and then Phil Leonis. So I've got to say, Fergus, can you throw those last two questions at Larry, please?
Larry, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this evening?
As always, I have, yes.
And will you be joining us again very soon?
Yeah, very soon. Yeah. We need more.
We have time.
We've just literally wet the appetites. The taste buds have just been tantalisingly teased for the return of Larry Nemeczek and more Trek news, short treks and long treks and various other bits and pieces. It's a Trektonia world.
It's there. It is. It's so much more than when we first visited. Trek well, guys.
You to me are sweet as roses in the morning. And you to me are soft as summer rain. And don't in love we share that something rare. The sidewalks in the street, the concrete and the clay beneath my feet begins to crumble. But love will never die, because we'll see the mountains tumble before we say goodbye. My love and I will be in love eternally. That's the way, that's the way it's meant to be. All around I see the purple shades of evening, and on the ground shadows fall, and once again you're in my arms so tenderly. The sidewalks in the street, the concrete and the clay beneath my feet begins to crumble. But love will never die, because we'll see the mountains tumble before we say goodbye. My love and I will be in love eternally. And that's the way it's meant to be.
So on my list of things to do here, it says Richard's nephew Dylan might want to say hello. It's all to do with Tessa Snot. So Tessa, would you like to put Dylan on so he can say hello?
Hello, yeah, hello, I would. Here he is now.
Whoa! Hello, Dylan. Is he going to say anything? Dylan, hello. Welcome to Siren Radio's Midweek Drive.
Hello, my name is Dylan, and I'm on holiday, and it's my birthday on Sunday, and I'm turning 7.
Then I think we have to say happy birthday.
Happy birthday
to Dylan, turning 7. It's all downhill from now, Dylan, so don't worry. You know, you've reached that peak, you've made it past 6, so by the time you get into the 7th year, forget it, you know, it's just, but, you know, somebody will have to explain it to you, so we thought we'd break the news now, but enjoy the time whilst you're with us. That's the important thing. Dylan, thank you. That's great stuff. Dylan, we'll welcome you back into the show in a few moments, no doubt. Always like to ensure that young people are actually sort of made very welcome on the programme, really. It's very, very important, because it is Tessa's Tune of the Week. Tessa, what have we gone for this week?
Hello, we're going a bit different this week.
We are indeed.
We're going for an artist called Drew Dixon, and his lead single called Madam D's. He's quite rocky. He actually reminds me a little bit of Elvis Bailey, the male version. He's got a bit of soul in there. And this song is taken from his self-titled EP. And here it is. Madam D's.
I know. Who knows? I mean, we had a very, very, very strong entry from Danny Vaughan, keeping the D thing going earlier. It'll be interesting to see whether this actually knocks Danny Vaughan's line into a thing when it comes to Robin Pierce. Anyway, full announcing once again, Tessa. I know you. Whereabouts in Yorkshire are you, by the way?
We are in Esholt, I believe, at Sipley. And just down the road, literally 2 minutes down the road, is the Woolpack pub, which was originally used in Emmerdale.
And you know what to do. I mean, for Dylan's birthday, take him to Emmerdale. I'm sure he'll find the series fascinating.
I know.
Right up his street. Dylan, we appreciate you joining us on the show. I'm sure you'll have a longer time in the near future. But now, Tessa, introduce Madam D's, please.
Okay, so here's Drew Dixon with Madam D's.
There's a blood moon rises low. The shadows walk amongst the day. Dark water don't swallow you whole. The dead trees, they are lies of pain. Before the house of the damned is sold. throne. A haven for a lonely fool, abiding by the woman's rule. Candlelight and wild desire, burning like a church on fire. Deep inside you're losing all control. In the house of a thousand souls. But the judge stops by from time to time. Says he loves the way sweet Delia smiles. That son of a bitch gets her half the pie. Coraline, she draws a rough bow. Snake tattoo all out the lane. Step out of line, you're bound to find out. She keeps two pistols by the bed.
Drew Dixon, Madam D's. Okay, your initial thoughts, please, Rory.
Oh, this is great. And again, we were talking about how this is kind of same genre as Danny Vaughan's song from earlier.
We'll go into our sort of Ian Lennox Decider tomorrow. I don't know, but what do you think, Fergus?
It's a tough call. I have no idea which one.
Is this going to be matched by our film critic and writer extraordinaire, of whom even Ed Fortunes has actually said the reason he's not listening at present, even though he's a fellow Starburster, too exhausted from Worldcon to tune in, Mr. Jam. Never mind. Rest well, buddy. I suppose it's not rest in pieces. Too much Tarantino. Welcome, Robin Pierce. How are you?
Hello there. Very well, thank you. How are you, people in the studio?
Well, there's lots, so much to squeeze in. It's just as well H.M. Gooden couldn't actually make it. So we had, and Anna Lewis. Robin, you've been listening to the show. Your thoughts on the music, your thoughts on the battle between Danny Vaughan and Drew Dixon and the rest of the show. You've got 4 minutes. Your time starts now.
Right. I'm glad that William Coles is having a better week. Alex Zane, lottery, 25 years. I think I've only done it 5 or 6 times. Pet peeve about people in the cinema, talking and phones. I actually take my cinema seat about four rows lower down now, just so I won't see people's phones, but they insist on talking behind me. I would like to thank Zoe Jameson for the positive karma to Bo, who's making a good recovery. Danny Vaughan, Shadow of King John. Do you know, it took me back to Disney's Robin Hood, that did. Arthur Weingarten, talking about pilots. I watched 2 pilots last night, and I'm still convinced that TV used to be so much better. I watched the pilot to David McCallum's Invisible Man series from the mid-70s.
Oh,
remember that?
Classic. Indeed, you actually had Craig... I can't remember his... Craig Stevens.
Craig Stevens,
the,
yes.
The Clay Corporation. K-L-A-E, of course, as in the Clay Corporation, which was the secret organisation that Daniel West ended up working for.
Yeah, and of course the boss was actually played by Jackie Cooper in the pilot film.
Before Craig Stevens took over.
Yes, sort. Arthur Weingarten pilot, yes. I tell you what I've started to watch, and I'm absolutely loving the second time round, more than I did before, and indirectly it's your fault because you reminded me the series existed, is Sequest DSV.
Superb.
Because I was going on about Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea.
And the dolphin. Let's not forget the dolphin.
Darwin, yes.
Sorry. Just had a moment there. I'll ease back.
Oh, good grief.
Carry on.
You, well, wow. You sound like Stephen Hawking on helium.
Whilst you're having a moment, consider this little number.
Don't dare stare at the illustrated man.
There are fearful pictures on his skin, but the most fearful thing is tattooed on his soul. The Illustrated Man, Ray Bradbury's masterpiece of the supernatural, an incredible journey to the outer limits of imagination. The Illustrated Man, starring Rod Steiger and Claire Bloom, from Warner Brothers 7 Arts in Technicolor. This picture is rated M.
And now playing exclusively at Pacific's Pickwood Theatre in Wundy, Westwood.
Yeah, as it is. Sorry, that little
I bought that very same album on Monday.
Well, you've got to work it in a sort of Tarantino homage, really, haven't you? So there you are. Yeah, it's no surprises whatsoever.
I'd like to add my happy birthday greetings to Dylan.
Absolutely.
Well, the hope you're listening on podcast. Mm-hmm. Right then. It's awards time. Drew Dixon. I like Drew Dixon a little bit better than the Danny Vaughan song, I'm afraid. I'm sorry, Danny. I'm desperately sorry. But somebody had to win, and this was not your evening.
There you go. You see, he tells it like it is, and Robin will be already gearing up for another edition of the Stone Tapes in a matter of moments. Robin, it has been awesome. We're going to, next week, I guarantee, I know, and Andre is back with us next week, but I'll guarantee.
One quick thing, Larry Namichek, man of the match. Thank you.
Oh, yes. Right, interesting. So, I say, your contributor, you'd actually award to Larry.
Yes. Yes,
there we are.
I loved his recollections of Robert Butler.
See, it just shows you, Rory, how things can open up in all so manner of marvellous ways, etc. Okay, Robin, who would you like to ask you the last two questions? Would it be Rory?
Let's go with Rory. We haven't spoken before.
Oh, I
don't think we have, no.
Is that because we kind of made you do the apprenticeship of the morning shows, Rory?
It may have been.
Before you get the chance of actually emerging like Fergus did a few weeks ago to the evening slot. Anyway, carry on.
So, Robin, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today on the show?
It was brief, but pleasurable.
And will you be joining us again, maybe to do some more awards with us soon?
I would love to.
We've been traveling over rocky ground, rocky ground. We've been traveling over rocky ground, rocky ground.
Rise up, shepherd, rise up. Your flock is roaming far. Stars have faded, the sky is still. Angels are shouting, glory and hallelujah.
We've been traveling.
Jesus said the money changers in this temple will not stand. Find your flock at them higher ground. Flood waters rising in Canaan bound. Flock or they will stray, will be called for our service come judgment day. For we cross that river wide, blood on our hands will come back on us twice. Rise up, shepherd, rise up.
good enough, the Lord will do the rest. You raise your children and you teach them to walk straight and sure. You pray that hard times come no more. You try to sleep, you toss and turn, the bottom's dropping out. Where you once had faith, now there's only doubt. You pray for guidance, only silence, now meet your prayers. The morning breaks, you will wake.
I was so full of the joys of Springsteen's latest work, and of course blinded by the light, that I've forgotten just how good his 2012 number Rocky Ground actually was. Springsteen goes spiritual. Truly wonderful. Travelling over rocky ground. Nothing to do with ice cream, Phil Innes, you'll be pleased to know.
Bruce Springsteen, not a fan. That's all I have to say that. You know, I just said that. I really didn't recognize it. I said, is this Bruce Springsteen to you, right? Because it's not what I expected, and that's not a compliment. And so I said to Lily just now, you know, that I wasn't a fan of Bruce Springsteen, and she said, well, because you're not from New Jersey. And I said, or maybe because I'm not a young man of Indian descent from England. There you go. Yeah.
Have you heard any of the program, Bruce? I was going to. You see what I did there? Almost slipping into the whole vernacular of things. Has it cost you? I mean, do you know the significance of where Rory McGowan will be heading in about 7 English days from now?
Well, the significance of where Rory will be heading is that it's the place where Rory will be.
So no.
Thank you. Yeah,
he's nice. Going to Los Angeles.
I am indeed. I'm going to the West Coast of America. He's going to be San Francisco, Las Vegas.
Yeah. He's going to be in your sector. He's going to be in your zone.
I don't know. Vegas is on the coast.
I'm so
okay. Vegas is on the coast.
Global
so
warming.
Sorry
being
to
what
inform
it is.
You. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So sorry to inform you. It's gone. Los Angeles is. We've built a wall around the city, so and we're making Trump pay for it. So that's what we're
the city of angels.
No, Rory,
is with the angels.
Exciting! This is exciting news. So you're going to be here in 7 English days, and that's kind of an Alex Lefchik sort of thing to say. And how long are you going to be here in the city of angels?
Well, only for about 4 days, because I'm
American
doing a
days.
Whole, American days, not to be confused with the
Terranian minutes, yeah. Exactly.
Oh my God, they last forever. I got to tell you, American days seem to last forever right now. So, well, that's actually better. That's good news, because Los Angeles 20 years ago had become a place that people visited for layovers, for like 2 days tops. And so clearly now we've doubled that, and we're worth 4 days. So I like that. Alex, you might need to facilitate a little email interaction between Rory and myself so that I can maybe plan some kind of tour or something.
I mean, that's what you call the brotherhood and sisterhood, obviously, the general fraternity and sorority of the Midweek Drive. So just as actually...
I like to think of it as a kissing cousinhood, really.
So where are you going, Rory? Anywhere planned?
To be honest, my dad has sent me the entire schedule, and I have not looked at it yet. I know roughly the.
You've got to work in some Linus and Hollyman time, surely. I mean, you've got the Linus family.
I hope we have time.
That's
for
like
it.
Sort of going to, I don't know, some Elton John gig and not finding Prince Harry in the nearby seat with you. I mean,
what makes you think that his dad
didn't put that into the itinerary.
Yeah, once again, you know, you're ahead of me with the all-seeing eye that demonstrates. At least Phil probably didn't hear my comments about probably I found a better documentary than The Truth Is Out There. I never thought it would happen, but yes, in terms of Iris Stephen Bear's What You Leave Behind, the Deep Space Nine 25th anniversary on. Chase Masterson's in it, I mean, for goodness sakes. I know she's in The Truth Is Out There.
This is the fan-funded documentary, right?
Yes.
And I don't know if you've seen this, or you've probably been talking about it, because, look, my favorite part of the show thus far was when you just asked me, are you getting this song okay, off air? But the success of this Iris Stephen Bear documentary has finally, coupled with CBS and Paramount Pictures reunifying and becoming a significant media corporation again.
Yes.
I mean, they had been, Paramount had really become very much a tiny, tiny shop, and all their rights had been stripped from them. Mm-hmm. But now that all the rights are back together under one roof, there is actually talk about revisiting Deep Space Nine, which has always made a great deal of sense because people forget, but it had equal viewership numbers to The Next Generation.
Exactly.
And which is twice the audience that Voyager had. And I always thought that instead of like a big screen movie, oh my goodness, revisiting it in miniseries form made so much sense.
As indeed does a rerun of the Numero Uno ad, which of course we ran earlier in the production. And I think, Rory, you're a bit concerned about in terms of what colour you happen to be as a man and working through that. Now we've got Sam in to actually develop things as well. It's even more wonderful. That, of course, is the fabulous Sam Stone, in case you actually haven't realised, using the all-seeing Linus eye, that Sam Stone and David J. Howe are in the studio, in the house, as they might have said in the 1990s, in some bad Tarantino movie.
Yeah.
But, I mean, given that David's channeling the spirit of his inner magnum for today's particular production. It is the perfect T-shirt for radio. I think David might well sort of acknowledge the importance of this.
Four men on a search. Each man different. Living his own way. Searching. Discovering Numero Uno, the new thing in colognes for men. In all the world, there are only four basic masculine scents. Here's the best of each. Numero Uno Gold. Numero Uno Green. Numero Uno Red. Numero Uno Silver. Four Numero Uno colognes. All different. All wild. Find yours with a searcher kit. A jigger of each scent. Then get a full-size bottle of the one that makes it for you. Numero Uno!
You see, given that there are only four basic DNA bases, adenine, thymine, guanine, and cytosine, it makes sense that, you know, Sam Stone might attest to only four basic male scents. Gold, green, red, and silver. Yeah,
fantastic. I wear nothing but a Numero Uno, and I was actually feeling there. I'm going to get a pack of Laramie cigarettes and go off.
It's Americana.
Well, as the saying goes,
pose on the front of my Dodge with some beautiful girl.
Now, steady,
arm,
please.
You know.
Hashtag me too. Step away from that.
Well, as the old saying goes, my men wear Numero Uno, or they wear nothing at all. but you know what's odd? You know what's really odd about that is that there was an upscale pizza chain, a chain of restaurants. That was thought of, oh, this will be exciting. We'll do like sit down formal dining for pizza. And it was called Numero Uno, here in America during the 80s and early 90s. So all I can think of is that this fragrance for men just leaves them all smelling like pizza.
Margarita, pepperoni, fantastic. Hawaiian, and meat feast.
They're the ones.
But like margarita, I don't think so.
Yeah. Is it also the smell of ponchos from kind of like Mexican spaghetti westerns as well or something?
Now you're just making me hungry.
But I'm sorry.
It's one of those reasons that means that the shock news that Richard Fitzwilliams has actually seen Once Upon a Time in America
Hollywood.
Twice. Or indeed Hollywood. Sorry, yes. I'm easily mistaken. I mean, one's Tarantino. Yeah, the other one's Sergio Leone. You know, one's Spaghetti Western, the other's...
So where's the video... First, the video...
No!
Hang on, Phil. Was the video for that trailer directed by Robert Rodriguez? That's what I want to know.
Okay, well, I need to just backtrack to the weekly Alex Lefchuk correction of the week. Mm-hmm. Neither of those, Alex, is a spaghetti western. Mm-hmm. Once Upon a Time in America is a gangster film You're thinking Once Upon a Time in the West.
Exactly. Easily mistaken.
Yeah.
And then there's Once Upon a Time the series, which still confuses me because I don't know what's real and what's Storyville, personally. But there we are.
And there's Once Upon a Time, which is the first part of the two-part Prisoner finale.
Of course.
So where does it end? It ends over with Sam, who needs to get us out of this nonsense.
What's the answer, Sam?
Sam, allowing for the fact that you can bring this wonderful sort of balance to the world and so on, and we'll get the microphone in front of you, good soul, so we'll work our way through this. How is your crime writing career now going?
It's going really well, Alex. I've written a second book, which my agent has and absolutely loves. Third and fourth are in the planning. And
she's running out of people to kill.
And you were recently at Harrogate's crime convention, which in many ways is the San Diego of crime fiction.
Absolutely.
In the British Isles.
Oh, it was super. It was so exciting to be there and great fun and wonderful, actually, how friendly and warm crime writers are.
And yet, tragically, possibly due to the fact that you're doing the Asylum Festival, you're not heading off to what I consider to be probably the best crime-titled convention I've ever heard, really. It's set in Morecambe, not quite, but...
I don't know about this
Morecambe
one.
On the West Coast, not too far away from Blackpool, it's called Morecambe and Vice. Oh, Morecambe and Vice.
And this is a crime festival,
isn't it? I believe so, yes, indeed. Jenny Finch is there as well. So I just done my bit for crime writers across the globe.
Well, maybe next year when things really kick off, I'll have to be doing that one as well then. Yeah. I'm certainly going to do Crime Fest next year.
You see, this is why I'm wearing this very bright shirt, because, you know, I have to be in the vein of American crime fighters who
of course
have big moustaches and wear...
As you may have heard, David, if you were listening to the show in the drive-in, we were celebrating with Arthur Weingarten, 35 years since Murder, She Wrote had its opening airing.
And it's never been off TV since.
Exactly.
It's brilliant.
40 years since Heart to Heart, and of course 50 years since Randall and Hopkirk, deceased, worked its way through
is
the process.
Really?
Angela Lansbury looks exactly the same as she did
of
then.
Course.
That's the crazy, crazy. That's the real crime. So what I want to know, when we say crime writers, which is, I must admit, is a phrase I'd never actually heard before, crime writer. I love it because it makes me think of, like, somebody saying, you know, I write the crimes, somebody else carries them out. Mm-hmm. But I never get my hands dirty. But does that mean fictional, or does it mean true crime, or can it mean either?
Usually, Phil, it means that they're writing crime fiction, crime or thriller fiction. The field that I'm working in is actually called domestic noir.
Ooh.
So that's the two books I've written so far.
I can almost sense Lady Killer's sequel coming up in terms of domestic noir. A whole new
domestic
genre.
Domestic noir? No, that's my fragrance for men. Domestic noir.
Yeah, it works in more ways than...
Oh, God, that's fantastic, right? Spice up your home life with some domestic noir.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. And it's noir, rouge... There. Blanc.
Oh, my God. Blanc.
Just pretentious enough to compete in the market.
We're obviously opening this whole sequence up so he can use the lines that we're seeding in here to the next Chilpack Hollywood show, which is great. If you haven't already downloaded the last Chilpack Hollywood, it's all about documentary filmmakers with, indeed, Robert Nichols, not the Fly Me to the Moon specialist who we regularly do pieces with. Easily confused.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought this up. Yeah, this was a shockingly good show, and as was revealed to me, the guest, Robert Nichols, a professor of documentary film, he expected that he was only going to come on for about a 10-minute segment to remember the late, great D.A. Pennebaker, who shuffled off the mortal coil just a couple weeks ago, and we had him on for the whole show, and I thought a fascinating discussion. I mean, I know a thing or two about film history, and I was fascinated
Little disappointed you didn't reference my podcasts on documentaries and the lectures that Rory actually sat in on, so on, which are available for download completely free of charge. But what the heck, you know, it's there. I can only spread the word so much before the Americans will actually sort of click on the whole
thing. I think when he referenced Nanook of the North, that was his winking way of recognizing you.
So, yeah. Well, as a reward for that, and as we begin to head up to the last two conceivable questions, allow for the fact that sometimes Phil even does the breakfast show.
Los Angeles weather.
Low overcast tonight, low around 58, mostly sunny tomorrow with a high near 68. No smog, beaches now 62, valley 66, downtown 65, Orange County 66.
Never let it be said that we don't actually do our bit to help out in terms of the transatlantic line there, basically. Yeah. Speed of delivery, if nothing else.
I got there. It's hot.
I demand to be introduced with that. From now on, when I come on, that's fantastic. Is that the real Don Steele or is it Robert W. Morgan?
I have a feeling it's the real Don Steele because it works as a rhyming scenario in any case. But as time begins to take us through to the news at the top of the hour, Phil, would you like to ask the quartet of quality that we've ended up with, having actually spent most of the show with just two souls? That would be Rory and Fergus. Those last two questions over to you, please, Phil.
In answer to your question, do I want to ask? Mm. No, okay. I don't. Why should the fun have to end? Look, I think we give too much power to the programming people. Schedules are meant to be broken. Let's just keep going.
I'd love to, but our Patrick Adams-led Siren Cinema show people will be upset, and it's their 30-second show as well.
All right. Okay. All right. Fergus, Rory, have you enjoyed your time on the Midweek Drive today?
Of course.
I have, Phil. Thank you.
Are you back tomorrow?
And are you back tomorrow?
Could be. I have so many questions about LA, Phil.
Yeah, I mean, very quick. You got a minute, Rory. Go for it.
We were talking about food places earlier, Phil. At least you were. Any places to eat in Los Angeles that you would recommend?
Tough one. Places to eat in Los Angeles.
Food places. That's awesome. We here in America call them restaurants. yes, I have recommendations, but, you know, I don't do them over the air without getting paid for it. So send me an email. An email and let me know where you're going to be. Because it does matter on where you're going to be.
That's true. LA's a big place.
I shall do the introductions. In fact, Sam and David might be able to help as well.
This is something worth mentioning really quick that people need to know when they come to Los Angeles. Population-wise, not one of your larger cities. But in terms of being geographically spread out and it taking a long time to get places, it's really important to know kind of what part of town you're going to be in when looking for recommendations. And I bet Sam and Dave will back me up on that.
Exactly. You can set off for dinner and not arrive until lunch.
Fergus was nodding as well, so just goes to show. Right, that's it. Thanks to William Coles, to Zoe Jameson, Danny Vaughan, Arthur Weingarten, Larry Nemechek, Tessa Snart, Robin Pierce, and you, dear listener, as well as Rory McGowan, Fergus Jeffs, Sam Stone, and David J. Howe, and Phil Dearness. It's time for us to say those final few words. David, you're a writer. What final words should we wrap up the show with?
I think we should wrap up the words with the words Eggs Benedict. LA breakfast
study
lasts all morning.
Right, okay. Eggs Benedict, LA breakfast lasts all morning. Sure, after three. One, two, three.
Eggs Benedict, LA breakfast lasts all morning.
Yeah, you see, it just shows to show working with professionals, it can pay dividends in more ways than we at first thought. That's the important thing. And now, the news from the Sky News Centre. I thank you.
FM. Online. Mobile. This is Siren Radio. Lincoln.